Hello, Sangha. Greetings. Hi. Good something or other to you, whatever the time zone might be. So today, as Diana beautifully invited us this morning, we have expanded our practice in the concentric circles, opened up to the possibility of sharing our goodwill, our care with someone with whom we have a little bit of difficulty. And I loved hearing this morning Diana really skillfully emphasizing that the so-called difficult person, I just loved every time she put it in quotes, the so-called difficult person, the so-called, the quotes. And that is so important. And I heard that emphasis in some of the practice discussions. And in some cases, I felt like it was kind of perhaps not quite heard or dropped. So I wanted to highlight that, take a highlighter and highlight, hey, remember Diana said that? That's so important. And even perhaps if for us to perhaps label, you know, if we want to use the label for this category, to call this category, which is a mouthful, I agree, it's complete mouthful, ready for it, a person with whom we have difficulty right now. The person with whom we have difficulty right now. Right? Because first of all, it is someone with whom we have a difficulty. We have a challenge. They're not a difficult person. Again, this is all said this morning. I just want to bring more emphasis to it. It's because it's so important. It bears repeating. It's someone we're having some challenge right now. Maybe they're a good person, a good friend at some point. Maybe they will be a good friend, but it's just the right now. And that, hey, they're not difficult. They're not a difficult person. We're having a challenge with them right now. And in fact, they might think we're difficult. We think they're difficult. They think we're difficult. So it's just really bringing emphasis into the impermanence, the transience of this perspective, the transience of this perspective of challenge. Because this perspective of challenge with this person is just ours. Other people love them, perhaps. But our perspective right now, which could change, is this. And also, again, highlighting what Diana spoke about this morning, and you know, choose a 3 out of 10. And many of you did, and it was lovely to hear that in the practice meetings. And some of you went for the 10, and for some of you, that was appropriate because you were prepared for it. And some of you were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, all right, let's back off. And again, it's okay. Please start where it's easiest with the person with whom we have a challenge right now. It is a mouthful, this new label. The person with whom we have a challenge right now. Just to say classically, by the way, this category in the commentaries is called the enemy. We know we do not use that term. It's just, that's like, oh my goodness. That's, it becomes a little inflammatory in the mind, my enemy. The person with whom we're having some challenge right now. Maybe it'll become like a sing-a-song, a little rhyme in your mind. And along those lines, with some of you actually discover this on your own, and for some of you, I would recommend, I would invite you to consider this, because when you are engaging the practice of with metta, expanding your heart for the being with whom you have some difficulty right now, you'll realize that, oh dear being, oh good person, dear person, challenging person for me, we are entangled right now. We are entangled together right now. We are entangled. So bringing attention, not to the person so much, which we can do there, I'll say a little more about that in a moment, but to bring attention or metta or care to the entanglement, to the relationship. May both of us who are entangled in this moment, in this way, may both of us have ease. It's in a way admitting the impermanence of the entanglement. And it's also bringing wisdom that there are so many causes and conditions that have brought this entanglement about. It's not just them being difficult. It's not just you being difficult. It's so many causes and conditions beyond your control. It's societal, it's cultural, it's other friends, other beings, just so many things, biological, who knows, so many causes and conditions that all of them came together, all the conditioning they have, you have, all the circumstance that has made you, the two of you, be entangled in this moment, in this way. So may both of us who are entangled in this way, in this karmic way right now, may we both have ease. May we both be safe, happy, healthy, ease, whatever phrases you're using. So working with the person with whom we have difficulty right now and expanding our heart to them with care, with metta, is an extension, again, I want to review this, but this is very important. It's an extension of how we expanded our heart to the neutral person yesterday. I see some of you nodding. Yes, it's like when you practice with the neutral person, you get to tap into the humanity of this human being. Just like me, you want to be happy. Just like me, you wake up in the morning and you don't want to cause harm. You don't say, okay, whom can I hurt this morning? No, that's not how we operate as human beings. In our minds, we're living according to our values as best as we're able to, as best as we're able to. And similar to the neutral being standing for all humanity, so too, allowing ourselves to see the humanity of the person with whom we're having difficulty right now. But just like me, they're a human being. Just like me, they're doing their best. They're trying to do their best in the way they see the world with their conditioning. Just as I have my conditioning, they have their conditioning. May both of us have ease in this entanglement. And again, mentioned this morning, I want to bring it in now that you've had a day of practicing with this, and maybe there's some questions that have come up. If at any point you find difficulty with this category, it is helpful. It is helpful to bring to mind some of the gifts, some of the goodnesses of this being, this quote-unquote person with whom we're having difficulty, or so-called challenging being, challenging person, to Just step back and consider, okay, what are some good things about this being? Some gifts, some ways in which they have supported me in the past. And really let yourself lean into that. Sometimes the mind is like, no, 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 I don't want to think about anything good about them. I just want to remain angry and upset. I'm like, okay, sweetheart. Yeah, we can, yeah, we can do this just for a moment. You can tell yourself, fine, you can pick up your anger later. It's okay. But for now, oh yeah, this person actually, wow, they're really supportive in that one incident when that thing happened. Wow. Feeling of appreciation, gratitude might arise. Or that you might realize, oh, there's some really good qualities about them. Like this person is really conscientious in these particular ways, and you really respect that about them. There's goodness there. There's goodness there that you can feel into. Of course, it doesn't have to be about every aspect of the being. And of course, again, we don't condone the harm that has been done. We don't push it under the carpet. We don't try to la-di-da-di-la-da-da, make nice, like it's okay. No, seeing the humanity of the other being doesn't mean that you condone the harm. You get to see their goodness, their humanity, and separated from the actions, the harmful actions. Now, there could still be harm done, the sense of, okay, I'm going to wish you well and not let you back into my life ever again. And that is okay. That is okay. Sylvia Boorstein likes to say, I'm going to paraphrase something like, don't shut anyone out of your heart, even if you need to shut them out of your life. Right? Don't shut anyone out of your life, out of your heart. And you wish them well. May you be happy. May you be safe. And maybe for whatever circumstances right now, it's not appropriate for us to be in each other's lives. So expanding your heart doesn't necessarily mean that, oh yes, back into my life. Maybe there's been so much harm and it's not appropriate for them to be in your life at this point right now. But continuing to see their humanity and wishing them well. Adding metta for them. And as you've been practicing today, and as have come up in practice meetings, the need for forgiveness arises. The need for forgiveness, either for yourself in ways that you have engaged in the relationship, or the need for forgiving them, perhaps, arises. This idea of forgiveness. And to say that the idea of forgiveness, again, here is not offering forgiveness. We don't offer forgiveness to others because they deserve it. We offer it for the freedom of our own heart. We offer it for the freedom, for the sake of the freedom of our own heart, whether or not they ask for it, whether or not they deserve it. That's not the question. Because after a while, when you continue to go over the hurt over and over and over again, the person who's becoming harmed isn't them anymore. It's you. They've moved on. They've gone off with their lives. They're not even thinking about you in this moment. And for the millionth time, you're reciting and your cortisol is in going way up through the roof, and you're angry and upset, and your health and your heart, and just you're sowing the seeds of discontent and anger and ick. It feels sickening. And there is and some nuances here I need to bring in. Some nuances I need to bring in here. One is that anger does serve a purpose in our psychology, in the range of our emotions. Anger does serve a purpose. So to be a good practitioner doesn't mean we completely get rid of anger. It actually, there's an energy in anger that gives us a signal, and sometimes it's appropriate when there is a moral transgression. And the sense of anger, actually, there's a helpful information in this energy that can support us. It doesn't mean that we act out of it always, but also there can be very clean sometimes. There's anger, there's an expression of it, there's information we gather, we maybe act or not out of it, and then we let go. However, anger that becomes habitual, repetitive, is corrosive. When there's anger over and over, it becomes resentment. It becomes resentment over and over again. Again, the other person doesn't feel it. They've moved on. And it's likened to a hot coal that you're picking up to throw at the other person. Guess who gets hurt by picking up a hot coal? We do. It's also anger has been likened to a prison, to a prison. So forgiveness, the idea which I would like to talk about today, is a way to release our own mind, to offer freedom to our own mind and heart. So forgiveness. So psychologists generally define forgiveness as a conscious, deliberate decision to release feelings of resentment or vengeance toward a person or group who has harmed you, regardless of whether they actually deserve your forgiveness. It doesn't mean that you gloss over you or deny the seriousness of an offense against you. There is no forgetting, condoning, or excusing the offenses. And there is no obligation to reconcile or even to release them from legal accountability. Instead, forgiveness brings the forgiver a peace of mind and frees them from corrosive anger. So, in a way, forgiveness empowers you to recognize the pain that you have suffered without letting the pain define you, enabling you to heal and move on with your life. So, not letting the pain define you and enabling you to heal and move on with your life. Instead of throwing perfectly good moments of perfectly fine moments where you could be happy and well and healed in the present moment, you're still throwing them out the window after those moments when you were hurt. You're just throwing out perfectly good moments of your life after the ones already gone down the drain. Like, enough, enough. Okay, thank you, enough. So it's really for our own benefit, forgiveness. So forgiveness could be private, only for your benefit. It doesn't necessarily mean reconciling with the person who upset you or condoning the actions. So in forgiveness, you seek peace and understanding that come from blaming people less after they offend you and taking those offenses less personally, which again is a way to bring in the wisdom teachings of impersonality, which might seem, wow, it's personal. And yet I'll just drop that in, not to go off into a papancha, like, but just consider that. So lack of forgiveness constricts us, makes us less available for our life, in our life, for taking in the good. Because if we're so busy being resentful. So it's for the freedom of our own hearts. Alice Miller says, genuine forgiveness does not deny anger, but faces it head on. Doesn't deny it, but it faces it head on. By opening to it and acknowledging it, acknowledging that it's not helpful anymore, the anger, the resentment, and that you wish to be free from it. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, says the head says compassion, forgiveness. These are the real ultimate sources of power for peace and success in life. I love that. These are the real ultimate sources of power for peace and success in life. It makes sense to me. It makes complete sense, because the power of compassion and forgiveness, the heart can have so much peace and not be entangled, not be imprisoned, to be free, to have peace. And success, whatever that means to us, in freedom, in well-being. Whereas even if people live in mansions, if they're angry or resentful all day and can't sleep, that's not freedom. That's not success. That's not happiness. That's not peace. You have to take gobs and gobs of Valium to just calm your nerves. What's the value of that? So, ultimate sources of power for peace and success in life. I love this next quote I wanted to share with you from Paul Boise. Forgiveness does not change the past, but it does enlarge the future. And my favorite quote is by Lily Tomlin. Forgiveness means giving up all hope for a better past. Forgiveness means giving up all hope for a better past. We cannot change the past. We cannot change the past. And to say that the practice of forgiveness can't be forced, cannot be forced, shouldn't be forced. It's a cultivation practice, similar to metta. Metta is a cultivation practice, not something you can force, you've noticed. You can't just say, okay, it's that you cultivate, you turn your mind to it gradually, gradually, gradually. And oh yeah, more and more reveals itself. You get surprised, like, wow, this is amazing. This is possible. My heart is capable of this. Who knew? Similarly with forgiveness, you don't force it. You don't decide, okay, today I'm going to forgive this person who's harmed me and I've been angry for the last 10 years. It's a nice intention. There's nothing wrong with the intention, but it's listening to our heart and forgiving as much as available to us, as much as we can, as much as we can release in a given time. So not to force forgiveness. And in fact, the phrases of forgiveness, as I will share with you in a moment, there is this sense of, in fact, let me just share. There are four phrases of forgiveness I'd like to share with you, and I'll post these so you don't have to write them down. And they have to do with the different aspects of forgiveness, asking forgiveness from the other person in your mind, offering it to them, offering it to yourself, and then the most beautiful aspect of it is offering forgiveness to the causes and conditions, which is a wisdom practice. It's quite lovely. So just read the first aspect of this. In any way that I have harmed you, knowingly or unknowingly, by thought, word, or action, I ask for your forgiveness as much as is possible in this moment. I want to bring the emphasis to as much as possible in this moment. So you're asking for forgiveness in your mind, in your heart, from this person. That's the first part of the forgiveness practice, or if needed, there are these four aspects. And again, those are the cases where you feel, and that might have come up. And I guess that there's so many different aspects to forgiveness. I've been talking about offering forgiveness so far, really, since we've been talking about the person with whom you've had challenges. And often when we consider that category, the way that they have harmed you arises, and hence the need for forgiving them for the harm, which is why I've been focusing on that aspect. But there are all these other aspects, as it has come up, as some of you have shared, and I trust has come up for you, for some of you at least, there's a sense of, oh, I harmed this person or this other person I've harmed. Oh, gosh, or maybe they're not even alive anymore. And that's okay. Doing this practice in our hearts and our minds, asking for forgiveness as much as possible in this moment. I ask for your forgiveness. The second phrase, in any way that I have been harmed by you, knowingly or unknowingly. Again, I love the emphasis, knowingly or unknowingly. So much of the harm that we feel in the world by people is because they don't even know. They're just bumbling about going their business, remember Sonder, they're the center of their own universe, right? They have their own life. Like, oh yeah, they caused us harm, knowingly or unknowingly, by thought, word, or action, I offer you forgiveness as much as possible in this moment. That is, as much as I'm able to. I trust, it's not I'm forcing myself to ta-da, forgive you completely, but as much as I can, as much as it's possible in this moment, I offer you forgiveness. Even if it's a tiny, tiny little bit, I offer you a tiny little bit of forgiveness. And maybe my heart right now, it chooses to hold on to the rest of the hurt, and maybe that's what's appropriate right now. Don't force it. Don't force it. And now coming to self-forgiveness. In any way that I have harmed myself, knowingly or unknowingly, by thought, word, or action, I offer myself forgiveness as much as is possible in this moment. And self-forgiveness sometimes actually can be the hardest of all. Might be easier to forgive others, but harder perhaps to forgive ourselves for perceived shortcomings or harm we have caused to others, especially people we've cared about. Just can be so painful and agonizing. In the same way that self-compassion, and this goes together with self-compassion, this practice of self-forgiveness and self-compassion, they go together. To acknowledge when our hearts are holding on to the hurt we have caused others, and just self-flagellating, just taking the knife and like, how could you do this? Ouch, 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 ouch. How could you do this? Ouch. Not forgiving oneself. Oh, sweetheart, you were doing the best you could. If you could have possibly done better, differently at the time, given all the causes and conditions, you would have. So self-compassion, seeing that you're hurt in that moment, you're hurting yourself in that moment, and offering. As much forgiveness as available, and it could take time. This may not be an overnight practice. And let yourself be surprised. Regarding self-forgiveness, Maya Angelou says, I don't know if I continue, even today, always liking myself. But what I learned to do many years ago was to forgive myself. It is very important for every human being to forgive herself or himself. Because if you live, you will make mistakes. It is inevitable. But once you do, and you see the mistakes, then you forgive yourself and say, well, if I'd known better, I'd have done better. That's all. So you say to people who you think you may have injured, I'm sorry. And then you say to yourself, I'm sorry. If we all hold on to the mistakes, we can't see our own glory in the mirror. I love her use of the word glory. We can see our own glory in the mirror because we have the mistake between our faces and the mirror. We can't see what we're capable of being. You can ask forgiveness of others, but in the end, the real forgiveness is in one's own self. I think that young men and women are so caught by the way they see themselves. Now, mind you, when a larger society sees them as unattractive, as threats, as too black or too white or too poor or too fat or too thin or too sexual or too asexual, that's rough. But you can overcome that. The real difficulty is to overcome how you think about yourself. If we don't have that, we never grow. We never learn. And as sure as hell, we should never teach. I love her words of wisdom. Maya Angelou tells it like it is. Self-forgiveness. So if we don't forgive ourselves. Gosh, how beautifully she puts it. We can see what we're capable of. We can't, if we all hold on to the mistake, we can't see our own glory in the mirror because we have the mistake between our faces and the mirror. And what my hope is, what my wish is for all of us, is to see our own glory. And hopefully on this retreat, we've had a glimpse at times, at moments, of the glory of this being who is us, who's doing their best, who's living as best as they can, living, aging, getting sick, at some point dying. And there's so much glory and beauty and magnificence that we have to share with ourselves and the world to shine it brightly. So, the fourth phrase, I like to go back to the fourth phrase from the third one, which had to do with self-forgiveness. The fourth phrase, forgiving the conditions. Listen, in any way that I have been unable to be with and respond skillfully to the pain and suffering of our world, my own pain and that of others, may I come to accept pain, suffering, confusion, and ignorance to be part of the journey, my own journey, and the journey of others. I offer forgiveness for the way that things are and have been as much as is possible in this moment. I offer forgiveness for the way that things are and have been as much as is possible in this moment. And this last one is, credit goes to Larry Yang for this fourth phrase. So powerful, so powerful. Offering forgiveness to the way things are and have been. It's acknowledging it's beyond my control. It is so beyond my control. Stepping outside of ourselves is just not all about me, me, me. So, what are some things that block forgiveness? What blocks forgiveness? Something that might block it is, might be a fear. Actually, first, there might be an unreadiness, as I've mentioned. There might be an unreadiness. And as they say, time heals all wounds. It might be too fresh. Too fresh. So give it time. Set your intention and give it time. Work with it little by little. There may also be a fear of becoming too vulnerable. Might be a sense of self-protection. That, oh, if I forgive them, they're going to hurt me again. If I let go of this hurt, if I let go of this resentment. So, know that true compassion, again, we've been talking about it in the retreat already, true compassion for the self, true metta, love for the self, as we've been encouraging you to hang in there with yourself. There is a sense of strength when you love yourself, when you truly, truly love yourself, compassionate to yourself. There is a sense of care for this being. Like, I love myself. You can't hurt me anymore. Because I love myself too much. So there's a sense of strength that arises from love, from compassion for yourself and for others. So this idea that in Western psychological lingo, we say boundaries. Boundaries somehow feels like we put up walls, like, oh, yeah, you can't get through my wall. But it's different. I kind of feel like metta is this golden, like invisible shield. Like when arrows come, they just hit it and they, it's like the Buddha on the light night of his enlightenment almost. Yeah, actually, there's a story of that when he was sitting under the Bodhi tree, the night of his enlightenment, at some point, there's so much metta. There's just infused with metta or himself or the world and Mara, the trickster who didn't want him to wake up, was just throwing arrows. And the arrows, when they come near, close to this metta shield, as I want to call it, they turn into flowers and just they get transformed. So in the same way, I mean, this is a lovely story, but it's not just a story. There's a teaching here. The same way when we really care for ourselves, there's a sense of metta, not just for ourselves, but for the other person. It's not out of hatred. Like, I love me, I love you. Love in the way of metta. I mean, you may not love every aspect of their personality, it's okay, but I care for me, I care for you, and out of care, you cannot hurt me. You cannot hurt me. It's a different definition of quote unquote boundaries. It's like this metta shield, like, you can't hurt me. It's like, I care for this being too much, and I care for you too much, for your karma to let you do this to me. So there's a sense of strength that comes from metta, from compassion, from forgiveness. It doesn't make you weak. All of these go together. They're linked. It's actually what makes us more tender and vulnerable, is to stay stewing in the resentment. It will weaken your immune system. It will weaken your heart. It will weaken your social connections. It will weaken how you feel about yourself. Vulnerable. So it's actually forgiveness has the strength. It's forgiveness is for the strong. As Mahatma Gandhi says, the weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is the attitude of the strong. So it's the other way around. It's the other way around. Another thing that can block forgiveness is in some circles, it might be saving face in front of others. When the sense of self is not dependent, as when the sense of self is dependent on others' opinion, oh, what would they think of me if I forgive this person? So again, there, bringing metta, bringing the sense of independence in metta, independence in sense of strength and love for oneself. They can think anything they want. I want the freedom of my own heart. That's the most important thing for me. Again, forgiveness is not for the weak, it's for the strength, for the strong. Attribute of the strong, as Mahatma Gandhi says. And it might take time. It's okay. We have to go through it over and over again, every time just a little more. Forgiving ourselves, forgiving others, or asking for forgiveness in our hearts, in our minds. I've mentioned this before, but to just emphasize it again, I think it's important to feel the sense of suffering in ourselves with the lack of forgiveness. To really feel into the anger, resentment, and just the suffering and how it's not compassionate and it not in our best interest, really. And reflecting on the benefits of a loving heart, the benefits of a loving heart. And as Jack Kornfield says, discover that it is not necessary to be loyal to your suffering. You really do not have to be loyal to your suffering. Be loyal to your glory, but not loyal to your suffering. I mean, there are cases where after years and years and years, it's the same story. This person just did this, I did that, I'm upset. Like, they're so loyal. We can be so loyal sometimes to our suffering. We don't want to let it go. So loyal. We're defined by it. It's our identity. Who would I be if I don't define myself by this hurt or this challenging relationship, this suffering, this difficulty? Don't be loyal to your suffering. This is a big one. As Jack says, this is a big one, he says. We are so loyal to our suffering, focusing on the trauma and the betrayal of what happened to me. Okay, it happened. It was horrible. But is that what defines you? Live in joy, says the Buddha. Live in joy, says the Buddha. And understanding that forgiveness is a process. Again, different words of saying that it can take time, and embarrassing these few from Jack Kornfield. He has a lovely article on forgiveness. He has the story, he says, there's a story of a man who wrote to the IRS. I haven't been able to sleep knowing that I cheated on my taxes. Since I failed to fully disclose my earnings last year on my return, I have enclosed a bank check for $2,000. If I still can't sleep, I'll send the rest. It's a training. It's a process, layer by layer, layer by layer, layer. It's how the body and the psyche works. Yeah, and setting your intention, as mentioned before, setting your intention, it is wholesome. Because setting the intention both has a power short term and it has a power long term. And setting your intention can set the compass of your heart and your psyche. And if you have an intention, then the obstacles become more surmountable because you know where you are. You have a compass. You have set your intention. You have set your intention. Setting your intention is really important and powerful, even if it's not long term. May I forgive someday myself? May I forgive this other being someday? And to say, you know, I've been emphasizing the inner dimensions because we are on a silent retreat right now. And yet there are, of course, outer dimensions to forgiveness. There are certain kinds of making amends or confessions or reaching out if it's appropriate. It's appropriate. So there are inner forms and outer forms of forgiveness, but it starts from the inner form, starts from the inner form. And sometimes the outer form is not possible. The person might have passed away. So we maybe need to write a letter and read it out to them, to their photograph of a deceased loved one. And it's really, in that case, it's a self-forgiveness. And start where it's easiest. We sound like a broken record, Diana and I. Start where it's easiest. Start where it's easiest. And bringing first the person who's easier to forgive. Easier to forgive. Start with the 5 pound weight. Then 7, then 10, then 20, and then maybe working your way up to the 100 pound weight. And another aspect, another piece that I borrow from Jack is, and there is so much wisdom in this. Be willing to grieve. Be willing to grieve. As at the beginning, I mentioned about forgiveness. It's about facing anger. It's not about condoning. It's the same way. Actually, grief, the five stages of grief developed by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, does have bargaining, fear, anger, acceptance. So that aspect of anger can be part of this process of grieving. It's okay. It's a process. It's a process. And it can take, it's a growth process. It's a growth process. And the example of Nelson Mandela comes up, who before he forgave and actually was part of the Truth and Reconciliation Councils, there was so much, as a young man, it is said that he had so much outrage and anger and hurt that he sat with for years in prison. Desmond Tutu talked about that beautifully, that he was not ready to be the person whom he became later. It took years to work through all that anger and resentment, to let go, to forgive, to become able to hold the hurt for others and allow the transformation. So it can take time. Let yourself grieve. And forgiveness involves perspective. And I'm borrowing this from Jack, as he says, we are in this drama in life that is so much bigger than our little stories. When we can open this perspective, we see it is not just your hurt, but the hurt of humanity. Everyone who loves is hurt in some way. Everyone who enters the marketplace gets betrayed. The loss is not just your pain. It is the pain of being alive. Then you feel connected to everyone in this vastness. It's quite lovely. Again, this relates to the fourth phrase offered, courtesy of Larry Yang. So forgiveness for self, for others. What else? Maybe I'll say just a couple more things about self-forgiveness. A couple of things I want to say about self-forgiveness before closing is there is a difference between Shame, feeling unworthy, feeling bad to the core. So difference between that and there and remorse. And I am sorry that there's a sense of, oh, I wish I hadn't done that, but there isn't a feeling of shame that I'm bad, I'm awful, just because the feeling of shame makes you small. You sink into it. You sink into it. There's no way to come out of that. Whereas remorse can be generative, can be supportive. So don't let go of remorse and self-forgiveness. Let go of shame. I hope you understand the distinction I'm making. Give me a nod, yeah? Shame is just this deep, yeah, thank you. There's this deep sense of, yeah, it's a sinking hole. It's just a sinking hole of despair. Whereas remorse is, oh, and learning is a sense of separating your integrity, yourself, from your behavior. I regret I did that. I regret I caused harm. It's a regret about your behavior, but not who you truly are. So separate those out. Remorse for your actions is forward leading, is helpful in teachings in Buddhism. Remorse is, and in other traditions too, remorse is helpful. Shame isn't. Distinguish between the two. And that will help you to own up to your own part. Acknowledge your own part in it, the culpability that you've had. So the forgiving of oneself doesn't mean that you condone your own actions. You acknowledge them with love, with care. You know, if there's a child whom you dearly love and they've broken a vase, like, you're, oh, you're terrible, you're bad, I disown you. It's like, okay, please don't do that anymore. Please don't climb over that ladder. Like, don't, not a good behavior. And yet you love the child. You continue to love the child the same way with yourself. That was not skillful, but owning up to the action, owning up, owning up. And make amends. Make amends. If it's still possible, please make amends. Please make amends. If possible. Again, if the person has maybe passed away, maybe there's something that's either writing a letter or maybe doing something kind in their honor or someone, some of their descendants. I don't know. Be creative, but it's so, it feels good to make amends in this act of self-forgiveness. And cultivate, of course, compassion for the person you have harmed. You have harmed. Compassion and love for them. So I think that's all I want to say. And with a minute left, let's just sit and let the words settle. Forgiveness does not change the past, but it does enlarge the future. May we all forgive, learn from our mistakes, learn to forgive, let go, offer forgiveness to ourselves, and wherever necessary in our lives, to others, to circumstances, to causes and conditions, as they have been, as they are, as much as it is available and possible. Thank you all for your kind attention.